Welcome to Dentists, Puns, and Money. I am your host, Sean Terrell, and my guest in this episode is Ken Kaufman. Ken is an expert and thought leader in the dental industry as it relates to the financial and accounting components of running and scaling group and DSO practices. Ken recently wrote a book titled Financial Secrets to Grow Dental Organizations. And in this episode from that book, Ken shares the 9 required clarity tools dentists need to scale multiple practices. As a reminder, our company, Dentist Exit Planning, helps dentists leaving clinical with the financial piece of that transition, specifically how to reduce that massive lifetime tax bill and how to optimize living off your assets. If you're a dentist interested in guidance on your taxes and your income as you exit clinical, schedule an initial consultation with us on our website. That website is dentistexit.com. And with that introduction, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Ken Kaufman. All right, Ken Kaufman, welcome to Dentists, Puns, and Money. I'm excited to hear your story, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sean. I'm excited to be with you.
The place I always like to start is with some background for the audience so they know a little bit more about you and sort of your history and your career. Could you share just a little context on kind of where you've been and where you are today, present day?
Sure. I'll try to do this in a very summarized version. I did an undergraduate degree in business and worked for a high growth startup. And that's where I learned that I wanted to build and grow companies, especially high growth companies. Did an MBA, came out of that. And by 2004, I was in a CFO role. And then 2006 was the first time I really started to understand dentistry and see the industry of dentistry. In 2010, I took over a company called the Arebex Nomad, which is the handheld battery-powered device that a lot of your listeners probably know about and was pretty revolutionary at the time. Led that through an exit. Then I joined Community Dental Partners and was there for 6.5 years, grew from 7 to 80 locations. And where I am at today, just in the last few months, I've transitioned to Nuvia Dental Implant Centers, and we focus on full arch restorations. And I've been in dentistry for a while and I love it.
So as you mentioned, your education and your training is in finance and on the business and the entrepreneur side. You can apply those skills to any industry out there. What was it that attracted you to the dental industry for that application?
You know, that's a great question. It wasn't so much that I was attracted to the dental industry. I was attracted to high growth. And I found a couple of opportunities that were unique enough and gave me the opportunity to just, you know, roll up the shirt sleeves and build and grow the businesses. So that for me has been probably the biggest motivation. And then once you're in dentistry, they say you sort of can never get out. And there's so many great people, like, you know, Sean, what you do to connect the community and what so many other people do to connect the community of dentistry and the different trade shows and things that happen. Once you're here, it's kind of hard to leave, actually. Great people. It's a great industry. There's so many opportunities and everything's growing. And so I love being here.
Yeah, and I can relate to never leaving. And the thing that I appreciate about it is just the personalities in dentistry. Everyone, or at least in my experience, is kind. And, you know, dentists are good at making small talk. So there's never a shortage of things to talk about when you're talking with people that are either dentists or used to talking to dentists. Really topical reason for the podcast today is you have recently written and released a book. It came out at the end of 2022. The name of the book is Financial Secrets to Grow Dental Organizations. Maybe just before we even get into the details of the book, what prompted you to write it? That's a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I didn't set out to write a book for sure. But what happened is, having spent as much time in dental as I have, and then as I started to understand that finance in dental is very complicated, especially for growing and scaling organizations, more so than just about any other industry on the planet. I started to get some knowledge and some information that, and kind of an expertise, so to speak, that I started to have people asking me questions. Hey, Ken, how do you guys do this? How do you do that? How do you solve this problem? How do you solve that problem? And I became a partner in the DEO several years ago and speak on the, you know, regular dentistry circuit talking about all these things that I've learned over time. And I finally realized, you know what? I need to get it all in a book. I need to just crystallize everything, put it all together so that anybody could take it off the shelf and they could self-consume at any moment. And the goal was is to try to make it consumable because, Sean, you're a finance person too. And between the two of us, there are not very many page turner finance books out there on the shelf, especially for people who aren't in finance who you know didn't go to school in that or don't have a career in it. And so the focus was to try to write it in a way that was very digestible and consumable, but also layer in all of these really important concepts that when applied properly can make a tremendous difference in trying to grow either, you know, your single dental practice or if you're trying to grow and scale beyond that.
Yeah, I think you came up with a really interesting way to write it creatively in a way that is digestible for people. Could you share a little bit more about your approach with the book that's maybe a little bit more unique than just your standard industry, legalese, finances textbook?
Sure. So I actually ended up employing my daughter to help me. So we co-wrote the book, or she's my co-author. We're co-authors, however you want to say that. And in doing this process, what I realized was is that throwing a bunch of finance content out there wouldn't work great. But what would work great is if we created a fictitious but very relatable dentist entrepreneur and let everyone watch through her eyes how the financial clarity tools that are laid out in the book make a difference in helping her to be successful in what she's trying to build and how she's trying to grow. So Julia Miller has 5 dental locations. She started to hit some pretty rough patches from a cash flow perspective and some other things. And we follow her journey chapter by chapter, literally, as problems come up and then she learns how to solve them by implementing one of the 9 required clarity tools.
Very interesting. So Julia Miller is the subject of the book. She's a fictitious character. And I'm guessing that her story and some of the problems that she encounters, and I have not had a chance to read the book in its entirety yet, but I'm guessing it's written in a way that is just anecdotally a lot of the different stories that you've heard and encountered in your almost 20-something years in the dental industry.
That's exactly right. All of the conversations I've heard, problems that dentist entrepreneurs are facing and challenges that they faced, is in some instances where I've helped them overcome. And then what was really fun was taking that information and transferring it to my daughter. And then her creativity allowed her to create the character and the whole narrative. So she literally is the author. Anything that is about Julia and Julia's insights and what's happening in her head and her experience, she writes. And then I show up and I write the technical content when it's time to explain, okay, now here's what this clarity tool does and here's how it solves the problem and here's how you would implement it and here's how you would use it. And then my daughter comes in, takes over, and we hear more about Julia's story and we're just kind of handing off through the whole book. And it's just this kind of tapestry that's woven all the way through. And, you know, the goal, Patrick Lencioni's, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. These are books that I modeled this after, where they were telling a story, but teaching really important principles at the same time.
On a human level, I'm a little bit curious. You and your daughter, writing a book is a hard thing to do, and to do it with someone else, I mean, that's an arduous process. Did you guys come out of this as friends still, I hope?
We still work together, and we absolutely, we're still friends, and she's actually sitting in the room just over from me. She's my executive assistant. And so we get to work together. We get to be in family together. And yeah, great, great relationship. So somehow we survived.
I want to dive into the book in a little bit more detail. But before I even get into some of the bits and the pieces that are in there, I do want to circle back to something you said a little bit ago. And that you said that finance is very complicated for dental practices. As a follow-up to that, why is it so complicated at a high level?
Sure. So in healthcare in general, you generally entity up per location that you create. And dentistry is kind of it's all these small micro businesses. One dental practice that does 1 million or another one that does 1.5 million, or sometimes they'll do 2 or 5 million. And or sometimes you see really, you know, mega practices. But from a risk perspective and from a compliance perspective, often you entity up per location. So as you add locations, what ends up happening is you end up with a lot of entities, and then it starts to get really hard to get clear financially because you have some employees over in this entity, some in another one, and you have revenue coming in this one. And really quickly, the need for what are called intercompany transactions, mm-hmm. and then eliminating entries to pull all those out so that you can see a nice, clean, consolidated look at what your entire operation is doing, it becomes ridiculously hard. And you may have five practices, and you're going to spend more on accounting to get somebody to unpack that than a $100 million company that has a very simple business model and just one legal entity and no need for all these intercompany transactions and things.
So interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's not uncommon. And just in me and running my own business, it's really easy to forget, or like you're trying to jog your memory. Like, okay, what is that LLC called again? I can't even remember. And it's $1 million. So very interesting. So let's dive into the book. And before we even get to the pieces there, the word that I see you use with the book and talk about over and over is the word clarity. Why is clarity sort of at the high level centerpiece of everything that the book is about and that you try to teach?
So there's really two primary components that will answer your question. The first one is that without clarity in our businesses, our anxiety goes up dramatically. If we're not clear about where we're headed, about where we're going, and about what tomorrow is going to bring or what next month or next year is, and we never can be perfectly clear, but to have the right information in our hands and to be able to digest that, I've found that clarity becomes an anxiety slayer. And as business owners, entrepreneurs, we have this constant ongoing challenge where we have this imposter syndrome feeling that's going on, and we have all these other emotions that are happening, and we whipsaw back and forth between a very horrible Google review that just happened to we just collected $100,000 and it's the, you know, that's the biggest collection we've ever had. And we have these swings back and forth. Clarity slays the anxiety that goes with success and with failure and with the fear of failure and sometimes with the fear of success. And so that's the first one. And then the second one is, the second component of this is, with clarity, we can make the most informed and the best informed decisions about how to build our businesses. Again, whether it's one dental practice and how should I try to grow that or how should I try to improve it, or if you've got 10 dental practices, the clarity gives you the information you need to make the best decisions, to deploy capital, to be efficient, and to really create the best outcome that you're trying to create for, because you're trying to do that for your patients, but then we hope to reward financially. Dentists want to obviously be rewarded financially for taking great care of patients. And it's just so critical for making the right decisions as you grow.
So my inclination was to ask for a couple of examples of how someone gets clarity, but maybe there are 9 clarity tools that you reference in the book. Maybe in referencing those, we could give us a small example, and that would be the best way to illustrate a little bit better or to communicate a little bit better how you think about clarity and how you talk about clarity with dental practices. Does that sound like a good approach?
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Okay. So
the very first of all, the clarity tools is financial leadership. And this is a big one. Every dentist entrepreneur that has ever brought in somebody with some financial acumen to really help them organize and build and grow the business tells me, Ken, it was as if I'd been running a marathon with a 40-pound backpack and this person just showed up. And they're bringing me so much clarity and so much help. It's like somebody just pulled that backpack off and I just realized how hard it was without having that mindset and without having somebody that can help me. And, you know, whether it's a fractional outsourced tax, you know, CPA or an outsourced CFO or an accounting director, whatever it is, that is huge. And so that's one great implementation of it.
Okay. Second one.
The second clarity tool is what's called accrual accounting. Now, cash basis accounting is where whatever comes in and out of your bank account is what gets restated onto your profit and loss statement. And that's your financial performance. Accrual accounting actually follows something called the matching principle, which says the revenue that's being generated needs to be connected to the costs associated with providing that revenue. And transitioning, now somebody who just has one dental practice doesn't need to move to accrual accounting, but anybody who wants to grow or scale beyond that needs to have their financial statements presented to them on an accrual basis. Because this gives them the most accurate view. Because again, we're trying to reduce anxiety and improve decision-making. And the more accurate the information is, which is what accrual does and why it exists, it gives you the best and most accurate information so that you can make the best decisions possible as you're trying to continue to build your business.
And I'm struggling. This is something that I have read about and talked about. Is that what's an example of accrual versus cash based in terms of collections and in terms of overhead?
Sure. So here's a good example. It's the last day of the month and you have a patient come in and you deliver a massive amount of treatment to them. Let's say $20,000 worth of treatment. And you had a bunch of supplies that were required and expenses. You had to have employees stay after and put in overtime and all those sorts of things. And then what happens is in the next month, you don't collect that money. And then in the month after that, you collect it. So you're 2 months out where your collections are. But the payroll cost showed up in the next month. But the supply costs had been on your shelf for a month. So those costs showed up the month before. And you see all of a sudden, the cost and the profitability of that procedure is completely lost in a cash basis world.
Hard to track.
Accrual basis. Yeah, hard to track. In an accrual basis world, you can nail down and say, this is the profitability that I generated for my dental practice from this $20,000 case that I just completed.
Got it. Really helpful there. Number three of the Clarity tools.
Yeah. So number three is called the IMPACT standard. And IMPACT is an acronym. And what it in essence is doing is it is encouraging the dentist entrepreneur to understand that all information is not good. In fact, most information isn't even helpful. But getting data that passes through this IMPACT standard, and I won't go through the details of it, but each letter in IMPACT has a representation. For example, the I stands for end time. Because if you get your financial statements at the end of the month, great. If they're 2 months late, it starts to get irrelevant, right? So there's a standard that all of the financial information that you review needs to pass through before it's even worth your time to take a look at it and to digest it and then to try to figure out what to do with it.
Okay. Number four.
Number four is historical reporting. It is so important to know where we have been. And the reason why is because we learn so much from where we have been. And the ultimate goal here of having clarity is to be able to see the future. But you cannot see the future without truly understanding your past, what got you to where you are, what you're going to change, and then how that's going to impact your future. So you have to have this basis of historical reporting, monthly financial statements, those sorts of things, so that you know what your baseline is.
What is the fifth Clarity tool?
Future reporting. So this is about forecasting the future. And I break this up into three categories. There is what's called the 90-day cash forecast. I call it, Sean, the sleep at night report. And the reason why is because, I mean, every dentist entrepreneur I've ever met is smart and knows how to solve problems. They can just tackle them and solve them. But if you give them 5 days to solve a payroll crisis, sometimes that's not enough time. But if you give them 13 weeks to see that there is a cash flow problem coming, I have never seen an entrepreneur not figure out how to solve that problem. So we forecast our cash flow, which cash is king in the business, right? We forecast that out 90 days. Then we have what's called a 12-month rolling forecast. So this is a one-year look at if everything kind of stays the same in the business with any growth initiatives that you've layered in, here's where you're going to be in a year. And then the third one is what we call the five-year model. And this is where you actually build a model of your business the way you want it to look in 5 years. And as you're making decisions about, hey, should we acquire this practice? Should we bring a new associate doctor on? Should we do these different things? It becomes a tool that allows you to make really clear strategic decisions that are going to drive the best outcomes for the business.
Because you can test it against that five-year plan and that five-year vision.
You literally can drop those assumptions right in and see, what does it do? Does it blow your plan up? Does it improve it? Does it make things look better or worse? All of that becomes very real time. And I'll tell you, Sean, I get dentists who push back on me on this. They say, Ken, I can't see the future. I don't have a crystal ball. I completely agree with that. However, I've been around long enough and I've been doing this long enough that when you put the right tools in place and you have the right help, you can be very accurate about what's going to be happening in the next 90 days and even in the next year. And these are just things that are anxiety slayers. They give us the clarity and they empower us. And Sean, every time I've gone through this process with any dentist entrepreneur, they ultimately end up saying, okay, now I know how to improve things and make them better. Just after I got done showing them what was going to happen in the future, they say, oh, and what if we did this? What if we tweaked this? I think we could make this change over here. It's just empowering and it fuels the best decision making.
I love that because it's the same way in my world too. I can't predict what a dentist's financial future personally is going to look like for the next 30 years. Of course, we're going to have to make course corrections. I just say we got to pick a direction. We just have to have a little bit of orientation generally on where we're trying to get, and then we can course correct from there. Of course, we can't expect to know everything that's going to happen.
Sean, I think with your clients and with the dentist you're working with, that it's a huge value to them because having that little bit of clarity or even that lot of clarity, that it's so empowering and so energizing as opposed to being in the dark. And I attribute it to you're driving down the highway and you're in a huge rainstorm and your windshield wipers don't work and you can't see anything. That's anxiety, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I digress. Let's keep moving through the nine required clarity tools. I think we're on number six. What would you like to drop on us here?
Yeah. So number six is about financing, growth, and the DSO structure. And the DSO structure, this is the set of legal documents that allow non-clinicians to own part of your holdco and allow associates to own and, you know, do all those kinds of things, as well as to allow non-clinical investors to come into the business if that's something that you ultimately want to do. So we lay out all the pros and cons and talk about just everything that financing, growth, and the DSO structure requires.
Lucky number seven, what do we have behind this door?
Associate compensation and associate equity models. So it's how are you bringing on associates? How are they being compensated? And how are you sharing equity if you're sharing equity at all? So we lay out options and paths along that trail.
Okay. And then number eight?
Number eight is OPEX and CAPEX, operational expense and capital orders. In dentistry, we just sometimes get really stuck on that profit and loss statement and we lose track of what's really happening with our cash flow, the capital required to invest, to be able to grow, even to be able to maintain our existing locations. So that's the focus on number eight.
Okay. And then last but not least, the ninth required clarity tool.
This is what's called the ROI filter and prioritization tool. What happens with success is that you end up with a lot of great ideas, but never quite sure if you're picking the right ones to implement. And what this last chapter of the book does, it's actually my favorite because it had crystallized and come together just so perfectly when I wrote this chapter. But it is a tool that will help you see and understand what are the next moves you should be taking, what great ideas need to be shelved, and what great ideas are the ones that you need to invest capital in order to grow the most efficiently.
I'm curious about this one because I have no shortage of ideas as a business owner and you can't implement them all at once. So how do you avoid, maybe briefly, shiny object syndrome, as I call it and see it myself?
Oh, Sean, it takes so much discipline. So in the chapter, I actually write about a couple of different entrepreneurs that I've seen learn over time to discipline themselves with capital and with how they invest and with which shiny objects they choose to go after. And what it means is if you're great at coming up with the ideas, you need to get somebody around you who can document those ideas and then get them a couple of layers deeper in terms of what's it going to take to accomplish those ideas and what ultimately will be the outcome if you were to execute on those ideas. And ultimately, the tool that runs what's called an internal rate of return analysis, and it allows you to compare all these projects side by side. And the internal rate of return, or IRR, does not lie, and it points you to what's the most capital efficient decision and what's going to actually help your business grow the fastest. And I'll mention here, Sean, that in the book, there are QR codes throughout the book, and they lead the reader to downloadable tools. And this IRR calculator, it's right there in a beautiful Google sheet that you can download, and you can plug in any of your projects and the expected cash outflows and inflows. And then you can compare all those projects together. It's one of the applications. There's over 25 different downloadable materials that would help any of your listeners start to implement these clarity tools.
So one of the questions that I was chatting with you about before we hit record on the podcast was, I think I asked you, who's this book for? Is this for people that are already scaling dental practices, or is this for people that are thinking about it and want to know what the playbook is? You said it was for both, and maybe just touch on a little bit how the book could help in both those scenarios.
Sure, that's right. So for those that are scaling, this is a powerful tool to get you out ahead of some potentially wrong decision-making that's going to occur. Mm-hmm. and to help you prioritize how finance needs to fit within your organization and within how you are going to grow. Earlier on, somebody who's earlier stage, it's a really helpful read to get into the mind of a dentist entrepreneur that's trying to solve their problems of these five dental practices that Julia has, and as you follow her journey. And then I'll step all the way back, Sean, but the University of Utah just reached out and they've asked if they could use my book as a curriculum for a business course that they're actually teaching in the dental school. And they've asked me to come down and actually meet all the students sometime this semester to connect and just, you know, I don't know. It might be the closest thing to a celebrity I've ever been. Because like, how many times did you get to meet the, you know, the author of a textbook from when you were in college back in the day, right? But the principles and the concepts are there. And anybody who immerses themselves in them is going to empower themselves for how to take better control of their future.
Final kind of pointed question here, not pointed question, but just a specific question. For a dentist that is already an owner and thinking about owning more than one practice, more than one location, that's sort of like another path as I see it. It's sort of like the original decision of whether you want to own a dental practice at all or not. How do they know if it's a good fit for them to go down the path of multiple locations or multiple practices? Because that's a pretty big leap that's hard to unwind or jump back to the other side of the cliff again if you don't like it after you make the leap.
Yeah, that's really fair. And Sean, the way I would answer that question, it's actually a lot less about running the financial numbers. It's a lot more about that dentist getting really clear on who they want to be and what their vision is. Now, there are some who get very motivated to learn how to become a great leader because they want to expand their impact. They want multiple locations because they see patient groups and they see the services that they can provide. And they want to expand and grow in order to facilitate and make that happen, which is admirable. And there are some that succeed at it and some that end up being very skilled business leaders and they end up, you know, developing business acumen and all of those sorts of things. Many never went to business school, but, you know, just chose to invest in themselves and learn and be involved in groups like the DEO and other groups that have lots of tools and resources to train. And so if that's the path you want to go down, you want to do some soul searching. But there's plenty of opportunity to go do that. Or you may decide, even though you look around and everybody else is building practices and talking about these huge exit multiples and all these different things, but you say, you know what? I like talking to my patients every day. I like delivering care. I want to be chairside and work in my business. There's nothing wrong with that either. You can be very successful financially and build really successful dental practice that you kind of run and operate. And then sometimes there's a hybrid, Sean, where sometimes a dentist has a brother or a sister-in-law that's in business and they're interested in trying to scale and grow. And sometimes dentists can partner with somebody who can take on some of the business leadership of adding locations, but it can keep them in the chair. So the options are as numbered as there are dentists, to be honest. And it really just comes down to the dentist deciding what's the most important thing to them and what do they care about and where is their passion at? And then everything else, you can fill in all the rest.
No surprise. It goes back to getting clarity. I love it. As we wrap up, anything that we haven't hit on today that you think would be important to add, Ken?
Well, I think because I know those who listen to your show are thinking about exiting or at some point, you know, planning for an exit. And I want to stress a couple of things. Number one, it is so critical to do the planning as early as possible, because as you're thinking about your vision and where you want to go, having a great plan in place can make all the difference. Number two, I would really stress that you not jump on this bandwagon of what I call rack and stack, where you just are cobbling a bunch of dental practices together because you've heard you can get a 12 or a 14 times multiple when you sell them. This is very problematic. I'm seeing it in the industry right now. And the challenge is that when you have a second location, a third location, it's not about just having a dental practice. You need repeatable and scalable systems that are consistent throughout all of those locations so that you have levers to pull when, hey, revenue's gone down over here. Hey, we're seeing that new patient flow is down in this practice. You have levers to pull to be able to course correct and to actually operate those businesses. The challenge is I've just seen some who jump in and say, let's buy a bunch of practices and let's go sell them. But they're so disparate. They're all on different practice management softwares. There's nothing consistent, repeatable, or scalable amongst them all. And they kind of are cobbled together. I call it the rack and stack model. And the hope is that if you're going to go down that acquisition road, be very thoughtful, be very careful in how you are going to put multiple dental practices together. And my advice would be stay very, very focused on building a great business operationally, not on trying to cobble a bunch of things together that ultimately they're really hard to operate.
Really good business advice in general, I think, there as we start to wrap things up. The name of the podcast is Dentists, Puns, and Money. Do you have a great, terrible dental joke that you'd like to share with us as we wrap up?
This is a dental finance joke, Sean. So you heard about accrual accounting. I like to say it's a cruel world out there.
Didn't take long to get there. I love it. That's really good stuff. That is Ken Kaufman. He's the CFO speaker and he's an author. Ken, thank you for sharing your expertise. Thank you for telling us about your book and for being a guest with us today on Dentists, Puns, and Money.
Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure and I appreciate the time spent with you.
Thanks for listening and following along. Are you a dentist nearing your retirement from clinical, or have you already hung up your handpiece? Would you like a treatment plan for the financial components of your exit from clinical? Our company, Dentist Exit Planning, helps dentists like you reduce taxes in retirement and optimize how to best live off your assets, including the ideal time for you to start taking Social Security. If you'd like guidance on those critical pieces or just a second opinion, schedule an initial consultation with us on our website. Our web address is dentistexit.com, and there's no obligation for your initial consultation. That website again, dentistexit.com. As a reminder, Dentist Exit Planning and Terrell Advisors LLC is a registered investment advisor. The information presented should not be interpreted or construed as investment, legal, tax, financial planning, or wealth management advice. It does not substitute for personalized investment or financial planning from Dentist Exit Planning or Terrell Advisors LLC. Please consult with your accountant and attorney for tax and legal advice. This podcast conveys the views and opinions of Sean Terrell and his guests, and the information herein should not be considered a solicitation to engage in a particular investment, tax planning, or financial planning strategy. Information presented is for educational purposes only, and past performance is not indicative of future results.